It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday, September 4th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. What a long, strange trip it's been for Motorola. Founded almost 100 years ago, held up as a paragon of innovation and engineering prowess, and one of the first brands to bring us a true blue cell phone. Remember that Razr flip phone everyone had? It was huge. But in recent years, the company's been split. And the consumer side, Motorola Mobility, was bought by Google, raided for its patent library, and sold off to Chinese tech giant Lenovo. Well, today, in its home city of Chicago, Motorola has a chance to once again be the cool kid at the dance. After months of anticipation, it's unveiling the Moto 360 smartwatch, and people are excited about it. Brian Barrett is editor-in-chief of the website Gizmodo. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You love the Moto 360, and you don't even have it yet. Why do you love it so much?
You know, it's the kind of thing, when the Moto 360 was first announced, it was part of this very first wave of smartwatches, and they were all square and all kind of ugly-looking. And then the Moto 360 comes along, and it's this thing that you would actually wear as a watch, regardless of what kind of smart functions it would have. And the fact that it can do those things is just a nice little added benefit.
Motorola is in a really interesting place. This watch was probably designed before Google was going to sell Motorola Mobility to Lenovo, this Chinese company that really would like to get into the mobile device market in the U.S. What are you thinking about where the company is at as we prepare for this particular announcement?
I think Lenovo, if they have to land somewhere, not as an independent company, Lenovo's a pretty good place to land. They make good smartphones that just haven't made their way to the U.S.
But that's the big question, right? Is this the beginning of a bright future for the recently purchased by Lenovo company, or is it the last gasp in an attempt to convince people to buy devices from Motorola?
Yeah, I think the good news is we've seen the 360 looks like a strong product. The Moto X last year was a strong product, even though that was developed under Google. But in terms of, are they going to keep producing good-looking hardware? Are they going to have the wherewithal to get into stores? Certainly. Lenovo is very interested in this market. They've got a lot of resources to put behind it. So I think we can be enthusiastic about this company's future.
Brian Barrett, editor-in-chief of Gizmodo. Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All this week, we're looking at the ways in which technology is changing how we read. We've talked about reading education and technology and the changes happening at libraries around the country. Today, I want to go into how reading and the technology we do it on actually impacts the brain. My guest is Marianne Wolfe. She's the director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University. She's also the author of Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain. Dr. Wolfe, thanks for chatting with me.
Oh, my pleasure, Ben.
How does the way we read affect the way we think?
It begins with how reading brings to bear our background knowledge. It pulls it to whatever information we're reading. And from that, it allows us to go into new thoughts.
Our understanding also of how the brain works has changed in recent decades, and it's actually a lot more elastic than we originally thought.
Absolutely, Ben. We were never born to read. We're born to speak and to think and to see and all these things that have a genetic program, but we have to create our own circuit for reading. There's a reading brain circuit for Chinese, for English. But it also changes with our mediums.
And this is what's fascinating, is we're still going through this transition from print to digital reading. But based on what we know so far, what makes digital reading different?
Digital reading predisposes you to skim very well, to multitask, to be in kind of an immediate world where you have short bursts of attention and you're getting information fast. But if you're reading something that's complex, real focused attention, print seems to be more advantageous for that. Mm. And the research is completely open on this. So there is a lot of research that still needs to happen developmentally, longitudinally, and with great care.
If you could peek into the future and get some of the data on some of the science that's being done now, what do you think the most illuminating sets of data will be?
I would like to think that we could have studies in which we have, let's say, children like the Amish or Orthodox Jewish children who are living in environments where there is no technology, whether we could follow them and have perfectly matched samples of children who have an absolutely digitally involved world from the start. My guess is that we will find that various forms of reading are well suited to some mediums versus the other. And I don't think there's just going to be two mediums by any stretch of the imagination. We are in the beginning of a digital world, but it's a world that we need to understand better than we do.
Dr. Marianne Wolfe is director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University, and she's also the author of Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain. Dr. Wolfe, thank you.
You're most welcome, Dan.
You can find more of our coverage of technology and reading all this week at marketplacetech.org. And before we go, Malaysia Airlines had a genius idea, an online contest asking people where they would want to go and why. 16 winners would get plane tickets and iPads. The name of the contest, My Ultimate Bucket List, as in things you want to do before you die. Not exactly the best branding move for Malaysia Airlines. Needless to say, the contest has been renamed. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.